Good morning. Where is PR always handling a crisis? Where is it that if you don't get it right, you, your boss, and your entire organization could be out of a job or in serious decline by tomorrow? Today, I want to take you inside the world of political PR, because as you're about to hear, there is so much that any organization, from a local shop to a major manufacturer, can learn from what you're about to listen to. If you want to be that person who steps up to help when a crisis hits your organization, then I think this is going to be a really good listen. Now, I think a lot of you know I used to work in European politics for several years, but this episode is not about me, because not long ago, a chap called Eric Olsen reached out to me after starting to listen to the podcast. And he told me that he was the communications director and a senior advisor to a member of the US Congress. And of course, the moment I found that out, I thought, I've got to get him on the show, because I think there's so much everyone is going to be able to get from listening to him. So we connected up, asked him if we could record the chat, and once again, he agreed, like so many other people. So after we'd started sharing stories of our respective experiences of political PR, we then pressed record after that, and that's what I'm going to share with you now. He talks about a threatened natural disaster that he had to help lead the comms strategy on, where people were being told to evacuate immediately, and we finish off by looking at how this can all be applied, as I say, to any business. I normally break up chats like this, but it just didn't make sense to, because this whole episode is all about the topic of handling a crisis. You'll also find this chat ends quite abruptly. We couldn't pack everything into the conversation, and so Eric, like everyone actually, is keen to come back on the show and share more. So if you have questions for him after listening to this, let me know. info@thepublicrelationspodcast.com, info@thepublicrelationspodcast.com, or you can always message me on LinkedIn, Richard Midson, M-I-D-S-O-N, so we can line them up. Oh, and don't forget, I'll be sharing the key points that you're hearing in this interview in next week's newsletter. More details on that after the interview. Here we go.
I think on political PR especially, I think it's, you get under the ether, it's a bug. Once you get bitten by that bug, you can't let go. You really just get addicted to the thrill, the rush, and the energy, and also, most importantly, the fulfillment and sense of service. You know, I feel on good days and bad days that even on my worst day, I can still make a positive difference for the causes I care about and the people we represent. So that's, you know, always rewarding.
Yeah, it's something we were talking about, wasn't it? Is that as a political PR, probably more than any other type of PR, you actually get involved in decision making as well. And you get, it's not just on a communications message, but you were saying to me about the need to know your brief, don't you? You can't just sort of go, well, this is what I need to sell, this is the idea I need to pitch. You've actually got to understand the policy as well.
You do. I mean, I think a lot of people might have a misconception that communications directors for politicians, you know, we surmise everything in 140 character tweet or whatever, and we don't even know what we're talking about half the time. No, I think it's incumbent upon myself and my peers to understand the nuances of public policy and to understand how to take a very broad, very difficult to kind of intuitively grasp and understand concept. You have to distill that down into a highly digestible message that anyone can understand. You have your very circumspect, very targeted audiences that you deal with in political PR, but you're also appearing on national television and you're talking to millions of people. It could be anyone from all walks of life. So you have to know how to communicate differently in that context, but you also have to know how to take something that's as complex as the 2014 Water Resources Development Act that has like 9 different titles to it, and your eyes just glaze over by the first paragraph.
I know. I remember these
days. But you have to know, you have to make that interesting to someone sitting at home on a Sunday morning before they start watching football, you know, because that's your job. That's task. So you have to understand the policy you're communicating about. It's not enough to just know how to frame something. You have to be an analyst yourself, I think, to do it right. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the process that you do. In fact, actually, a better way of doing this, give us a sort of case study. Give us an example of something that you did, that you've been working on, that really kind of helped to build that connection with the public, how you connected with them.
Sure. I have a crisis communications example I want to give. And, you know, there's, you know, I think most corporate PR, nonprofit PR, you have things that come up that are unexpected. But for the most part, you have a very protracted, very long-term plan you're executing. We do that in political PR, but we also several times a week have stuff that comes up out of thin air with a moment's notice, and you just have to be ready to go, and you have to have a process that everyone knows to switch to on a moment's notice. My example was, my boss was doing a town hall in 2017.
For people that don't know what a town hall is, it's where you're standing in a room answering questions for people normally, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's an effect, it's a necessary tool for elected officials because you want your constituents to have a dialogue with you and, yeah. you know, meet them where connection. They are. So, yeah. And so we had 3,000 people in a room. And all of a sudden, in the middle of this, we had TV cameras there. It was lots of plan. In the middle of this, we get a note dropped to us on stage that there is a dam in the most northern part of our congressional district that is overflowing. And the Department of Water Resources in the state of California noticed that by morning, it could burst and kill upwards of 60,000 people instantaneously. And so some context, there was one lane highway out of the valley that was below this dam.
Right.
So you had hundreds of thousands of people leave this event, drive home, get their cat, get their dog, hopefully get their significant other kids and flee. It was like get out now, emergency evacuation. You could be dead by morning. We are the senior most government official operating in this community. So initially had to cancel everything we had and execute a strategic plan that I basically, you know, people that don't know, I'm really big on creating a very clearly defined action plan for every possible contingency you'll have to deal with regularly in this job, including.
And this is something you've done in advance. This isn't something that you kind of a rough idea that you might have. You've actually got a clear plan. Yeah.
Every January I revamp them and I have different crisis communications plans. One's for national disasters, one's for, you know, political brawls in Washington. I pulled out my strategic plan for, you know, natural disasters. Unfortunately, in California, we have a lot of them. And start executing it. So immediately I manage a team of three. I divide us into shifts because we need 24/7 coverage on this. So you're monitoring emergency alerts, updating Facebook, updating Twitter, and providing hourly newsletter updates.
What do you see your goal at this point? What is your primary goal as from a communication perspective at this point?
Every minute counts. Minutes could equate to lives very quickly. So
we're talking about giving information to save lives. That's the goal. Yeah.
Yes. And at the outset, it's making sure people know, because typically when there's a fire or, you know, a hurricane, we have a couple days notice that, oh, fire started, could get bad by Wednesday. It's Monday.
And it's starting to get windy or there's a hurricane or whatever next week as well. Yeah.
Yeah. This is, if you don't pull off the impossible task of leaving on this single lane road in the next 6 hours, you could all die. And so first of all, waking people up, letting people know what is happening. We sent out a text message to hundreds of thousands of people. We sent out a newsletter. And then this is all happening internally with me and the two staff I manage. That this is copy text that we're writing and distributing to a mass audience. But we also
How you thought about the text that you were writing here? Because, you know, one of the problems with these disasters and things like that is that sometimes they don't happen and people can get very suspicious, can't they? They can kind of go, oh, you know what, they're always saying there's going to be something. So how did you approach the language that you were using?
We had a very clear, basically pointing out that there is a mandatory evacuation from the local sheriff's office. If you don't get out, someone's going to come knock on your door and make you get out. Yeah. So you better, might as well get out. So just letting folks know that we're telling, not asking. And then in text messages, newsletters, we can link to externally available information because, you know, we're a politician at the end of the day. You know, some people don't like us. Some people don't want to listen to us. Generally speaking here in this community, folks, you know, listen to their local law enforcement or their mayor, et cetera. Yeah. It kind of transcends partisanship. So we were very cognizant of that we needed more messengers than just us, because we are in a partisan office. So we emphasize that, consider that. And we're doing all of that, you know, updating our social media, you know, every 20 minutes, every time there's a new emergency update, we clarify it there, send updated newsletters every hour, send a new mass text message every hour. But then you also have a principal that you're working with. We have a member of Congress. He wants to get out there. He wants to make sure he's, you know, fighting for his community and getting the word out. So, you know, while I'm doing that, I'm also managing, I'm fielding 30 to 40 interview requests every 30 minutes, because this story very quickly that night became CBS Evening News, ABC Evening News. And so we just basically had to pick and choose which stations will be the most watched in our community, put him on those immediately, and then craft a message basically on the fly. One of the things I did is I, you know, put every, they call them public information officers that work on behalf of counties and cities in America, put all of their numbers on speed dial, and I got real-time updates from them, talking points from them, and basically work with emergency services to ensure that the information we were conveying was accurate and up to date.
So you were able to stick to those facts. You know, one of the problems, you just alluded to this, always with politics, is that, as you said, people will always want to criticize. So how do you approach something as serious as this, where there is still a clear message, but you know there are going to be people who are going to go, oh, it's that typical politician again, or they always make this stuff up, or, you know, it's pretty typical of, in this particular case, a Democrat or a Republican or whatever. How did you think about that, the threat of that?
So we actually had a Republican member of Congress represent the area just above the dam. And so we actually got him to drive down. So my boss drove up to where the dam was, yeah, where the emergency workers were just throwing, at this point, rocks and mud and on it to try to get it not spill over. It was very precarious. And he goes up there. I go up with him. And we have the Republican come down, and they appear side by side together, and they present a unified message.
Exactly.
We were fortunate to have the Republican member near us, available and willing to help. In that kind of situation, then we're talking about hopefully finding a local elected official who is known in the community as, you know, a member of the other side of the aisle. We would have gone and invited law enforcement on with us. Law enforcement were a bit busy doing their own thing, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting everyone evacuated. So, yeah, I mean, we appeared side by side with, you know, a Republican member who, you know, ideologically back in Washington, we share almost no idea, you know, no shared values, beliefs, or ideas with. However, I thought it was powerful that they were able to appear together and convey the exact same message together in real time. That was,
I mean, it's a lot easier here because it's fairly clear, isn't it? It's not like you can have an argument over whether people should avoid a potential disaster or not, is it? But it's still about, you know, from a wider point of view of PR as a whole, it's about getting people on who represent the opposition to what you're trying to put across, to hopefully endorse or at least be seen with you, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. I mean, we call it the third party endorsement, or in this case, you know, the opposite party. You know, the bipartisanship is an important thing, you know, goal to achieve whenever we're introducing legislation in DC. It's also important in a crisis communications perspective to represent all the information possible from a variety of spokespersons. So, yeah, I mean, that was essentially what we did.
You've got to tell us, because for most people outside of America, we don't know what happened. Did the dam go?
Yeah, so the dam never, it got to within, literally, we're talking like a couple of inches, foot, 2 feet. And, you know, God bless the emergency workers, they were able to prevent the emergency spillway from failing and, you know, cascading down on a community of 200,000. The estimated casualty rate, like I said earlier, was 60,000 dead. It would have been one of the largest mass casualty events in American history.
Wow.
Probably the largest. So
it was avoided,
but it, you know, but it was, yeah.
So let's try and look at this then and let's sort of say, okay, well, beyond politics and within politics for that matter as well, what can we pull from this? I mean, one of the things which I couldn't agree with you more is that you must practice crisis PR before it happens, because in that moment, I mean, you can't predict everything, you just can't, but there's an awful lot of things that you can, and even if they never happen, it's better to have a plan that you never use. You know, I mean, that's the first one that comes out for me. But I mean, pull some of the other things out of it that you think are clear things that people, whatever they're doing, whether they're doing cycling PR or whatever, should be thinking about from that case study.
If you're looking at a crisis, whether it be a scandal, whether it be a disaster, any that, you know, you can help prevent or involve with, preempting, getting out in front as early as possible is imperative. The initial moments when you know something's going to come out or you know something's happening, the people that comment first help shape and control the subsequent narrative.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting twiddling your thumbs for, you know, let's look at another lens of crisis communications. If you public official, if you're a figure, whatever, and you know that there's a nasty article coming out about you. I know over in the United Kingdom, the tabloids are notorious for, you know, a lot of very nasty reporting. My point is that if you just sit on it for a day, 2 days, and you're reacting, you're losing. And if you craft a message as early as possible and get out in front of it, then you become the single point of information. You control the narrative. The people that manage the DP oil spill crisis communications gave a briefing years ago, and they just emphasized accountability, accuracy, and preemptive communications are the three tools that every crisis communication plan.
One of the problems I think you sometimes get with this is that even when people know there's a story that could come out, they still put their head in the sand and hope that it doesn't. Even when you're starting to get calls from people about it. And it's, you've just got to be prepared, haven't you? You must see this all the time because, you know, journalists are always going to find stuff. How early do you start to try and make that comment then? I mean, is it the moment you start getting calls, or do you try and preempt it more than that if you think, look, it's going to get out? How do you decide that?
I think if you're waiting till something is out or announced, you know, if you're letting someone else drive your communications priorities for you, then you're losing. So that goes for both, you know, positive forward thinking things. If you're trying to introduce a piece of legislation, you know, in my world, or you're trying to announce a big campaign and you're not methodically, strategically kind of in control of everything that happens once the leaks start coming out, you know, then you're at a major disadvantage. You've lost control of the game. And so, you know, I think whether it's something you want to talk about or not, if you know it's going to make news, if you know it's going to be in the press, then it would behoove you to comment early and often and have a strategic plan that was written in anticipation of something like that. Just kind of the broad issue you have to deal with, as opposed to just coming up with it on the fly.
I think sometimes people kind of wait for that first call from the journalist, don't they? For, do you have a comment on this? And it's like, we're going to be publishing a story in, you know, X number of hours or whatever. And then people sometimes just spend that time squirming to see what the journalist is going to say. And I think so often you can pretty much work it out. Even if most of the time they're often going to tell you enough of a hint for you to know exactly what they're going to say.
Yeah. And you, I think a good PR professional and communicator, I think a consummate professional, does a good job of anticipating what the questions will be. If you do it long enough, you talk with certain outlets, certain reporters, you know what their angle is going to be. Everyone has an angle these days. Yes. So if you can anticipate that, and, you know, I do that. Like, my boss just did an interview 2 days ago on a network that is ideologically very conservative. And my boss is ideologically very liberal. And so I watched this anchor's previous six shows front to back. And I got an understanding of what kind of questions he likes, the ways he asks them. And then I was able to, you know, accurately predict some of the things he was going to say, because they tell you, we want to talk about this. It never ends up being that. There's always an angle. So if you can do that extra research, you're going to be able to, have a little, like, you know, I have a little like metaphor that I'm going to drop in relation to that, you know, if you can expect that, then. Yeah. And another thing is, I think a lot of times, even if you know you're going to be in a situation where you have to field incoming as opposed to reaching out, you can still jump the gun on that. My boss was, we whenever you're named to a committee here, something that can be newsworthy and important. I know that, you know, a lot of times one piece of television or mention in a newspaper can beget more opportunities. So I try to think strategically about what are the folks in the news industry reading and watching themselves. If I want to make my life easier, I'm not having to proactively pitch them all the time because I want to convey something.
I know that was a bit of a sudden ending there to our chat there, but we had to round up the chat quite quickly. There is just so much in that episode, as I think you probably heard, and it went on a way longer than I normally plan for these shows. So I'm going to put all the bullet points from this chat in the newsletter, which will be out next week, so that you can get on with your week now. Don't forget the newsletter. If you want to get hold of that, go to thepublicrelationspodcast.com, thepublicrelationspodcast.com, and then click on the newsletter link. It's as simple as that. And enter your details in there, and you will start getting the newsletter straight away after that. Oh, by the way, there's a bunch of people that when they signed up didn't click the confirmation email that also gets sent. There's quite a few of you. So if you haven't got that, sign up again and you should get that confirmation this time and be added to the list, because there's loads of you that just haven't done that, whether it went into spam or whatever. And if you have problems, let me know too. info@thepublicrelationspodcast.com. Right, that's it. I must let you get on with your week. I've got to get on with mine. I'll speak to you real soon. Bye.